SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201. what? Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964, and at our website, stevebick.com. And I guess, you know, officially I'm the jockey. And I'm in the jocks room, and I'm going to choose to ride today, even though it's around 10 degrees with wind chill. I am not refusing to come out. I'm not taking a shit. Oh my God. Why did you say that? Bad, Steve. I get it, but boy, I don't know what the criteria is. We started this at Thanksgiving, and then yesterday, literally, I mean, minutes before, you know, horses are going to assemble, jocks say they're not riding in New York, and too cold, too wind chill. And granted, the wind chill, we're talking single digits, and it's very tough over there at Aqueduct off the bay. So I get it, but it's going to make for some difficult situations. If you know, I mean, it's December. We got January, February, March yet. So I guess, you know, part of the new landscape that everybody has to adjust to. So you take your horse, you reopen the condition book and find, you know, the next opportunity. I mean, we were going to run yesterday, and it's not a huge ordeal, but you know, we'll find some. Actually, there's an interesting idea, but we'll take it from there. I'm not being tough on the jocks. I understand. Similarly, we can talk about the West Coast and the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office after a very extensive, obviously a very extensive investigation that they talked to everybody in sight. I mean, they seemingly left no stones unturned, and they issued a extensive report. I mean, for an entity that, I mean, it was entering into an arena that was going to be new to most of them. I mean, from what I understand, and from some feedback from people that were interviewed, they're among the investigators. They're, in particular, you know, one of the investigators who really knew quite a bit about the game and the industry. They did, I mean, yeoman's work. You don't necessarily have to. And I'm sure everybody has a different viewpoint on this, and everybody's got their own, frankly, agenda that they want to incorporate into what transpired at Santa Anita. But, you know, essentially, they did the work of all entities to dive into, you know, the winter at Santa Anita. Of all the entities that could have conducted an investigation like this, it's kind of funny that a non-racing entity, the district attorney's office, and yeah, they not only did they explain that there was no wrongdoing and no illegalities or cruelty or, you know, anything that, you know, would constitute, you know, a legal action from a from an entity like the district attorney's office. They actually were, I thought, from some of the sections of it, and it doesn't really cite specifically, I'm sure several of the investigators on the task force contributed to the writing, and then it was all put together, but they very much acknowledged that, you know, this is a lawful enterprise. It's a dangerous enterprise, and, you know, there's a bunch of moving parts, and it seems like, you know, a lot of things can go wrong, and seemingly more things went wrong that winter in terms of contributing factors. But they were very much supportive in a lot of ways of the industry at large. They encouraged, you know, further efforts to make racing as safe as possible. I mean, we're all in agreement on this, aren't we? There's some actually really interesting elements within this too that encourage people to read it. It's not a long read, and there's quite a bit of statistical and charting kinds of information, including maybe the most telling, the history of fatalities at major California racetracks, where they've got Del Mar, Golden Gate, Los Al, and Santa Anita. And you can see quite clearly in a graph form the overall steady decline in incidents over the last decade. And this is, you know, this is the overriding message to drive home industry wide, that since, you know, it didn't take 2012 at Aqueduct, it didn't take Del Mar a couple of years ago, it didn't even take this. The industry has been working on this steadily and conscientiously for years, and if a segment doesn't want to believe that, okay, but it's our job to drive that point home. And here's the Los Angeles District Attorney doing it for us. I haven't seen the LA Times treatment of this and what kind of reporting it gets. That probably is a story in itself. But what you see in a graph form is how there's this steady downward tilt in the totals. And granted, I'm sure there's some averages and number of starts to figure into this, and you know, there's more than just, you know, the simple totals. But you see two things. You see that there's a steady decline, and you see that there's the occasional spike, and that will not go away, no matter how diligent, vigilant, and conscientious everybody is. No, the regulatory vets, the horsemen, everybody involved here, the jocks when they get on in the morning and the afternoon, no matter how careful everybody is and alert, you know, there's going to be the occasional spikes. And, you know, as we say, they play this game outdoors. We can't control the surface entirely. I mean, this is where the synthetic debate gets in. And clearly, you know, when you look at, you know, no one's going to argue the synthetic is a surface that produces fewer catastrophic incidents. Nobody's going to question that. But it's a separate conversation. Anyway, the task force, read this report. It's really, you know, there's some things in here that I thought were omitted, whether by choice or I don't know, some of the motivation of, you know, certain you know, certain points in within this. But overall, it to me seemed very much in touch with realities. We should also note that there wasn't in the necropsies. This is the first picture or snapshot we've gotten into the necropsies on the horses from this winter, from the first half of the year, because it's a fiscal year and June 30th. But you know, the horses that we were talking about through the winter, not one illegal med, not one illegal drug. The only medications found in the horses were legal therapeutic medications. So after all the accusations and the carrying on from certain quarters about, oh, the illegal drugs, not a one it found in the necropsies, not one. So, you know, those that have got that agenda, what are you going to do now? Go find a new phony pinata. Empty pinata, as it turns out. Beyond that piece of news from yesterday, quite a few other things going on, and we'll touch on a lot of them with today's visitors. Let's get a quick glance at the lineup. And Andy Beyer, I told you yesterday, Andy's going to join us, and always a treat. He's got some year-end thoughts, and specifically some horse of the year points, and something tells me it could be, I won't say controversial, but it'll be provocative. It's Andy. We'll check in with James Scully. Scully, terrific last week, a couple of nice winners, and who was it? Take These Chains was second at a big number, right? In that My Charmer behind Mitchell Road to help key the exotics. And Marcus Hirsch got that nice, I'll say it now because Mark, I can't say it when Marcus comes on, Super Santa Saturday at Fairgrounds. Marcus hates that. He hates that like I hate new shooters. We'll check in with Marcus. And on a serious note, I didn't get to it yesterday. I saw it while we were on the air, and I didn't want to. I had missed it, I guess, on Wednesday. But Tom Carey, 87, passed in Boca Raton. And of course, Tom Carey, I think the fourth generation of Carey family at the helm at Hawthorne, and sympathies to the vast Carey family. Tom Carey, a tremendous racetrack operator, horseman, and saw Hawthorne through. You know, everybody talks about the Arlington fire, and Hawthorne was very helpful to the Duchess Was when Arlington burned. Hawthorne had their own fire that the Careys had to rebuild. So I'll let Marcus add a thought. But Tom Carey, the horse we were watching yesterday, Prom Theme, she didn't run great. She kind of chased early. Looked like she was in decent position. But it was fun to still connect with Doug Danner. The speed held pretty good last night at Turfway from what it looked like. But the 10-year-old mare, we'll keep rooting for her as she turns 11. Depreciation, they're looking to get the bill signed to extend the 3-year depreciation. Probably talk to Alex Waldrop on Monday. I'm expecting that to be signed. Hammer later. Ed DeRosa, we haven't talked to Ed in the last several weeks for whatever reason. We just keep missing. And Mike Welsh, top of hour three, Jeff Siegel. We'll do some, there's not a lot of racing, but there's enough. There's enough. We'll do some recapping and more. And I got to take a few minutes quickly here and say thank you for the America's Best Racing. They had the fan choice, and I found myself surprised. I hadn't really thought about it, but very touched to be named the best racing show or podcast. All the podcasts and racing shows, everybody is dedicated to helping you as a player, as a fan, as a stakeholder to enjoy the game more. I was really touched by that. Let's take a break. Andy Beyer joins us first.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older in 21 certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American fall crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From Coney Island to the Sunset Strip, somebody's gonna make a happy trip tonight while the moon is bright. He's gonna have a bag of crazy toys to give the corners of the girls and boys. So Dave, Santa comes on day.
We're back at the races. Can't go wrong with Satchmo. And we can't go wrong with an Andy Beyer visit. Andy checks in pretty regularly, end of the year. And Monday's our last show of the calendar annum. Andy, good morning. Happy holidays.
Well, good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me. You know, I just felt a real urge to talk about the Horse of the Year selection.
Well, I got to ask you first, though. I want to check in. How's the stem? How's the leg? You all right?
No, I'm moving around okay. I mean, my I'll be back on my bike by the spring, and I'm functioning okay. So, thank you for asking.
Well, kind of a condylar fracture, and so you got the same conditions that many of our equine athletes have, and we'll get you back out there in no time. I'm intrigued. I mean, because you didn't give me any clues as to your direction. I mean, give an overview even before you talk about. about the vote and why and where you think it should head. An overview, actually, of the year, Andy, and because it was certainly tumultuous.
Well, yeah, I thought it was overall a bad year of racing. We didn't have much. It really didn't have any great stars. You know, look at the different, the different divisions. I thought that, you know, the whole Triple Crown competition, you know, just as measured by speed figures or anything else, was just as bad as we've ever had. The older horses, I mean, kind of nobody emerged. I mean, like, you know, Vito Rosso, you know, won the Breeders' Cup Classic, and, you know, he's no horse of the year. The 2 year olds, you can't even make an Eclipse Choice that's rational. You know, they're so poor. So I would say, this was really a subpar year on many fronts. But, you know, I take my vote in the Eclipse Award seriously and give it a fair amount of thought. And, I came to the conclusion that there's only one way to go. But when I talk to, you know, people, in the business that I respect, they had very, you know, they had quite different opinions. And, so I just want to, would like to tell you my thinking and why I believe I'm right that Maximum Security has to be the horse of the year.
Wow. And I, you know, as you were angling toward this reveal, I'm looking at the Best Buyers page at DRF, and I started to think to myself, he's going to say that he thinks Maximum Security is the horse of the year. He certainly is the horse of the year from a headline standpoint.
Yeah, well, that you know, for, you know, they don't pay off on that. And obviously, there was a a lot, rightly so, a lot of controversy over the DQ in the Kentucky Derby. I mean, I think that, I mean, I was, you know, I didn't think it was a good, decision, but I think that in terms of evaluating, the horse of the year, you have to treat it as a race that Maximum Security won. He was the best horse. He gets credit for that. But let me back up a little. I mean, after the Breeders' Cup, I mean, because of my generally negative view of all the three-year-olds, I thought that this was going to be kind of going to have to be a default choice. And, you know, the two default possibilities were Bricks and Mortar and Mitoli. And I have a feeling that Bricks and Mortar is going to wind up, you know, winning the Horse of the Year title, because people love to see all ones in the PPs, and and he's 6 for 6. I mean, you know, great trainer. You can't knock that. I don't think his record really stands up to scrutiny. The first of all, this was a really weak year for turf competition in this country in general. I mean, the Breeders' Cup turf was, it was a race that, for once, I mean, just did not draw the usual kind of strong European representation. There was nobody in the, you know, the same dimension of enable from the year before. And you look at the horses that Bricks and Mortar beat this year. I mean, United, who was second in the Breeders' Cup turf, was basically an allowance horse. Magic Wand, who was second to Bricks and Mortar in the Arlington Million in another race earlier in the year, those two performances came in the midst of a 15 race losing streak for Magic Wand, and you can go down the list, and you know, not only was the competition much, you know, not once in one of his races I think most viewers, you know, react and say, boy, what a brilliant performance this was. I mean, his, you know, he was like a typical turf horse who, you know, plops along and runs 6 furlongs in 1:13 and, you know, then accelerates for a quarter mile and wins by a half a length. I mean, there was nothing to get your, you know, to get your heart beating, at least not mine. So I was going to lean, you know, toward Mitoli because, you know, I thought he had a little more of a wow factor, an excellent 6-for-7 record. I mean, won the Breeders' Cup sprint against a very good field, you know, and as a capper, you know, I mean, probably his main achievement was winning the Met Mile, which, after the Breeders' Cup Classic and the Kentucky Derby, it's probably as important a race as this country has, that he beat a legitimate horse like McKinsey. You know, so I thought, I mean, he would be a respectable horse of the year, although, in fact, historically, I mean, no horse who was principally a sprinter has ever won the Horse of the Year title. So, you know, from a historical standards, I wasn't sure if his name would be on the list, but that was the, you know, my best idea. But that was until the Cigar Mile. And I thought that the performance of Maximum Security in that race really, I mean, it changed my evaluation of him. And I thought that made him the Horse of the Year. I mean, Spun to Run, who was, you know, coming out of a victory in the Breeders' Cup Dirt against he soundly beat a good horse at Omaha Beach. He'd run figures of 110, 109. He had good speed. Was a, you know, a really formidable rival for Maximum Security. I mean, he had probably Spun to Run at that point, I would say, had run better than any 3-year-old in the country. Maximum Security went head and head with him and crushed him, and, you know, got a figure of 111, which is better than, or at least as good as, just about anybody has run. And so with that race in mind, you look at this horse's record. Oh yeah, besides running that brilliant race, yeah, he also finished first in the Kentucky Derby. He won 4 Grade 1s. He finished first 7 out of 8. What more can you want? A horse who wins America's Most Famous Race, and then comes, you know, 3-year-old who then comes back and beats as good a competition against older horses as he could face at that time of year. You don't need to make any apologies for him as a Horse of the Year, and you don't need to go to default candidates like the Turf Horse or the Sprinter. So that's my vote. I hope it prevails.
Let me ask a couple of potentially probing questions as to why this will seemingly from the basic, I don't know, from the drumbeat anyway, post Breeders' Cup, it feels like the Cigar Mile was first and foremost a deciding factor for maximum security, even to get the 3-year old just to get the 3-year old male honors, number one, and essentially, Andy, on a couple of fronts, it feels like the 16 maiden claimer conversation won't go away. And then there's the animosity toward Jason Service and now somewhat against Gary West. The horse feels like the one that is being, you know, victimized in all of this. I cannot recall more of a flashpoint horse than Maximum Security in recent memory.
Well, I was down on him too. Just because because I didn't like this whole Triple Crown crop, but we have seen in recent years that, you know, when horses are so lightly raced these days that they get into the Kentucky Derby and into the Triple Crown Series, you know, without the kind of foundation that horses of yore used to have. And that's why we don't see, many, blockbuster performances, in the Triple Crown races anymore. The figures are just all kind of weak. But so you really have to judge 3-year-olds more about by what they do later in the year, because so many of them just, the good ones blossom. I mean, look at Arrogate. I mean, talk about a horse who delivered performances that you say, God, this was brilliant. Maximum Security, I mean, it was, at the end of the year, he's got two races against older horses. I mean, the Bold Rootler is just like a grade 3 sprint, but he won it with a good figure. But I thought the Cigar Mile was a defining race. He beat, the best horse, he could possibly face at that time of year. He trounced him. He ran a big number. This is who Maximum Security is. I mean, all the other stuff, the controversy over the Derby, Gary West, he ran for 16,000. All that's kind of irrelevant. I mean, I look at the Cigar Mile and say, okay, this is the real Maximum Security. Now, if he had just done this out of the blue, you don't consider him for a championship. But when you've got this on top of a resume that's almost perfect for the year and includes a Kentucky Derby victory, that makes him look pretty good.
Fold in, Andy, the monolith of the Breeders' Cup as well, because there it's going to come into play in a lot of these categories, particularly I think when the dust settles for Storm the Court, and I hate saying default champion as a 2-year-old, but it seems when there's confusion, people just more or less acquiesce to the Breeders' Cup result. Is that what's carrying Bricks and Mortar into the balloting?
Well, he wrapped up a perfect season, and he was one of the stars of the Breeders' Cup Day. And it does carry a lot of sway. I think that I'm sorry, know what I have to... I mean, if Midnight Bizou had won the Breeders' Cup Distaff, she'd be getting a lot of buzz for Horse of the Year. I would be really, really adamant she should, she shouldn't get it. It sways a lot of votes, but in terms of the 2-year-old, I mean, I don't know, I certainly thought that Storm the Court was pretty underwhelming in winning that race, but it's hard to make a real case for anybody else. I mean, the Breeders' Cup. It's our day of championship races, and in many cases, it should determine the championships. But I'm not going to vote for Vino Rosso for Horse of the Year, and I think I have the right candidate.
Well, I'm watching and listening and looking at PPs, and I suppose if you covered up things and you didn't necessarily know who the principals were and so forth, and you put the set of results next to each other, it might be a little tough to argue with a 3-year-old reeling off, 7 straight triple digit figs for starters, which is a rarity in this era, topped off by that 111. To see him do this late in the season, as the year went on, the Haskell, the Bold Ruler, the Cigar Mile. I mean, he was consistent and he finished strong. There's not a lot of knocks.
You've got your finger on the pulse of American racing more than I. Who do you think people will vote for?
I think that Bricks and Mortar is going to be, I think, will carry the vote. I frankly think this discussion will open up a wider, it might help open up a wider conversation. I certainly came out of the weekend thinking that it, given the result in the Classic and in the Distaff, that Bricks and Mortar was a leader in the clubhouse.
Right, and I think if you'd made up, if you'd made up your mind right after the Breeders' Cup, that would be an understandable conclusion. But I think we have to change our minds now.
Well, we'll certainly provoke some discussion. I mean, that I think will happen, and I'm glad that I allowed myself to be surprised, Andy. I didn't ask ahead of time where you were headed with your with this reveal, as it were.
Okay.
Aside from the action on the racetrack, Andy, how do you? I think we touched on it. Closer to the Triple Crown season. But now we're another 6 months down the pike. We're getting ready to open Santa Anita next week. And hopefully, there's a smoother season ahead at Arcadia. But, in terms of industry malaise and controversy, some thoughts about how the year ends and how we can improve prospects moving forward?
Well, I'm worried about California. I mean, California racing has been, such an important part of the whole American racing scene. You've got, the most passionate fans. I mean, you know, the historically the some of the quickest horses in the country have always come from California. I mean, you've got Bob Baffert, and I when you see other kind of trainers now kind of sending horses elsewhere, and you look at the the declining field size, and God, I mean, the races at, I love Del Mar, but geez, the races this fall particularly were, I mean, just a lineup of 4 and 5 horse fields. I mean, we really, there aren't enough pockets of strength, in American racing the industry can afford a, a sick Saratoga, a sick Santa Anita, a sick California circuit. And I don't know what the answer is, but I'm worried about that.
Well, certainly not. You're certainly, in good company. I the owners there and, virtually everybody is kind of holding their breath collectively. And, we'll talk later to Rick Hammerly, Bill Finley, and TDN today, kind of detailing I don't want to call it an exodus, but certainly a number of prominent barns from California are going to have a toehold in Hot Springs at Oaklawn. If there's 7 or 8 of them with about 10 to 14 horses each, I mean, that's a substantial number of, of horses, 100, 120 horses, not to mention the ones that had already moved to other parts of the country as the year was unfolding. And it's a problem. And frankly, some of it, Andy, is things that are some chickens coming home to roost after a number of years. And that includes date conversations where, any number of California stakeholders pushed to, trim dates and make it, easier to put together competitive cards that, players would appreciate, and basically it fell on deaf ears. The dates, remained the same, and even though the horse flesh numbers were dwindling, and now it's a full fledged.
And California has always had, kind of a distinct personality, distinct kind of racing issues and style of racing, and to have sort of like an out of state management say, oh well, we can come in and say, well, we'll remake California racing. It was a disastrous idea, to try to Gulfstreamize Santa Anita, was just not a good plan. I mean, even in its heyday, Santa Anita was not a place where we're gonna run, 6 days a week, 10 race cards or whatever. It just would never work out there. And, I just think the Stronach group really, made a terrible miscue thinking they could kind of impose, their Florida vision, on California.
We've certainly had that discussion, over the course of the year. Andy, as always, a pleasure, and appreciate the contributions all year. And we look forward to 2020, and let's try to make it better, and everybody pull in the same direction.
Okay. Good talking to you, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Always, always a treat. Thanks. Andy Beyer, everybody. And Andy, coming out for Maximum Security as Horse of the Year. Not we went into Cigar Mile saying he can sew up three-year-old championship. I just put out a little tweet missive with Andy's thoughts. Talk amongst yourselves. We'll take a break and come right back and be joined by James Scully. We'll get James's year-end thoughts. Maybe he's got some reveals when it comes to Eclipse thoughts. We'll talk to Scully and maybe, you know, see what he's looking at play-wise. Probably he's looking at a little Gulfstream, maybe a little New York, maybe a little Fairgrounds. Marcus Hirsch ahead as well, speaking of Fairgrounds. Hammer, Ed DeRosa, Mike Welch, Jeff Siegel at the Races Weekend Preview back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRFSports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the song on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood fraternities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Taking you inside the Sport of Kings,
It's At the Races on Sirius Sports 126. Here's your host, Steve Bick.
No, I want an official red eye haircut when I shoot you in a jet with my laser rifle.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
I forgot we had that bedded. Good job, Tish. James Scully joins us. I found a song, actually. You'll shoot your eye out. Y-U-L-E. I think by the Killers, actually. Scully, good morning.
Morning, Steve. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
And to you and Gigi.
Yes, and Gigi, and thanks for having me on. Glad to follow behind Mr. Andy Beyer. Enjoyed listening to him talk. I will say I'll echo his thoughts on Maximum Security, Cigar Mile. That race was awesome, phenomenal. He was dominant, his best race of the year, in my opinion. He's going to be a terrific horse next year. And he did finish first in 7 of his 8 races, Maximum Security. But I do think he was being a little bit dismissive of what Bricks and Mortar did this year. And to me, if Bricks and Mortar raced, you know, he didn't just stay at home and make most of his starts in New York or some other locale, shipping out only once or twice. He ran 6 times. He ran 6 different tracks, Florida, Louisiana, New York, Kentucky, Illinois, and California. And he won at 4 different distances, a mile and an eighth, a mile and a 3/16, a mile and a quarter, and a mile and a half. And to me, if you look at turf horses, they're not known, unless they're Lure and there are some other exceptions, they're known for just thrilling finishes, getting up in time. He did that every single time. He produced himself in every single race, delivered the necessary finishing kick to get it done. And voting turf horses Horse of the Year is not an it's happened a number of times here in the last 40 years. And I'll just go over them. Wise Dan, 2-time Horse of the Year in 2012, 2013. Both seasons, he was not undefeated. He lost both years. Cotizan, Horse of the Year, 93. He was 6-9 that year. And John Henry in 81, most of his wins that year came on turf. He got beat a couple times. And in 84, all of his wins that year came on turf, and he lost multiple starts that year. So given what Bricks and Mortars did, racing in 5 grade ones and a grade two, going undefeated all year long, really a remarkable season that I think is worthy of Horse of the Year honors.
And he is the leading candidate. I do understand Andy's thinking. And when you look at that, at those races that Bricks and Mortar participated in, and again, you know, horses don't have control over who shows up.
Right.
And clearly Magic Wand, you know, beating Magic Wand twice counts for something. I mean, Magic Wand's an international campaigner of the highest order, but that's kind of who sang it? That's where the story ends. I do get it. I mean,
with Maximum Security, he was, after he finished first in the Derby, that was the craziest thing you'll ever see in the Kentucky Derby, because usually when a horse is clear like that at the top of the stretch and veers into another horse, it's because they're out of gas. I mean, they're just not going to finish first, but he did it and was clearly going to finish first. And but he then was inactive for a couple key periods during the year. After that, he missed the rest of the Triple Crown. He came back. He got beat in the Pegasus. He raced once more until the fall, and that was in the Haskell. So, I mean, there was a lot of key races going on in late summer, early fall, and he came back on Breeders' Cup weekend in the state that wasn't the Breeders' Cup. So, it's a little bit of it is just like, hey, yeah, I mean, he was terrific, but did he do enough to accomplish Horse of the Year? And, I mean, to me, I'm more than willing to put Maximum Security second on my ballot, but I'm definitely going with bricks and mortar.
Fair enough. I think it's a healthy healthy discussion. That part, you know, that part of it will be interesting. I mean, there's talk about some of your other thoughts. And yes, we've got the La Brea and the Malibu to run next week, and Omaha Beach's involvement in particular, and Bella Fina's involvement too counts for something in the La Brea. I don't know how much, you know, influence on the top end the results could have, but they could influence some second and third, you know, some finalist kinds of things. What are your other major opinions heading into the end of the year?
Well, you know, I do think the 3-year-old filly race, I mean, that's, you know, between Serengeti Empress and Kafefi, you know, Kafefi's trying to be a 3-year-old filly champion and be a sprinter. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes down in the voting. And pretty much, I mean, a lot of the categories after that are pretty straightforward. I do think Storm the Court, basically, if Tisalaw had won that Kentucky Jockey Club, he would have made for a race. But there was enough mayhem. I mean, even a horse like Dennis's Moment, he was all chips in, winning the Iroquois instead of some major Grade One prep for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and got beat that day. And you know, 1,000 words didn't do enough. So I think a lot of the categories are pretty clear cut. I do think it wasn't the best year, you know, for racing per se, and obviously, you know, a lot of other issues going on in the industry, but it was pretty fascinating to have 3 major horses in Bricks and Mortar, Midnight Bisou, and Sister Charlie get to the Breeders' Cup undefeated. You don't see that all very often, and all 3, I mean, worthy champions, along with Matoli, who had a great season as well. So I look forward to seeing what we're going to have next year, though, with Maximum Security, because, you know, part of what was missing in the handicap division this year was that City of Light went to stud. I think Spencer Farm, I think I made this point before, made a great deal syndicating him in the summer before he got real good, because his performance in the Pegasus World Cup really left everybody wondering, or left me wondering, what could have been.
Well, that's fair, and there's been, in fact, I've got the, it's funny you bring that up, because I just earlier this morning, I went back and I was looking at the 3 Pegasus charts and you know, who had participated and what they went on to later in the year, you know, and to some degree, you know, a couple of horses have stayed on and yeah, normally would have ended up with the Breeders' Cup, and that would have been it. And they, you know, they had an added target, and obviously that's, you know, that had been the Omaha Beach plan. You know, the late date changing of you know, the Pegasus purse structure and format and medication rules. I mean, it's going to be intriguing to see who ends up going. And we're going to talk to Mike Welch at the top of hour 3 today. So we'll broach some of those topics. Well, James, great weekend last weekend. A lot of good opinions that proved out and provided players with some nice, you know, some nice support. You must have had a good weekend yourself.
Well, thank you, Steve. Yeah, and we've got some stakes racing at Fairgrounds tomorrow, 5 stakes. I'll give you a couple plays if you want them.
Of course.
All right. In the race number, I'll start backwards. Race number 10 is a Sugar Bowl for 2-year-olds going 6 furlongs. A pretty, you know, well-matched field, competitive field. I like number 5, Self-Taught. He's 6-1 on the morning line for Al Stahl Jr. Actually made his first start for Al Stahl last time. I thought that was a pretty nice allowance field he faced at Churchill on November 9th. And I liked the determination he showed that day, beating Mr. Tip and Lycan, who was exiting. I thought a really nice maiden win at Keeneland. I think this Shanghai Bobby colt can continue to move forward. And one thing he has going for him from a betting perspective is that, at least on our BrisNet speed ratings, all five rivals earned slightly better speed ratings than the 84 he got last time. But I'm not going to put too much stock in that. He's lightly raced. You can see these juveniles, young horses, jump forward significantly from a speed rating standpoint. And I just thought his last race was the best one in the field.
Nice. All right.
Moving backwards, and race number 7, the Bonaparte. It's always funny. It's funny to me to see this because I remember Bonaparte racing. I mean, it doesn't seem that long ago. But number 2, Pal in there, typically in a 5.5-furlong turf sprint. You get a race loaded with multiple speed horses. This race did not come up with that much pace in it, despite getting 9 horses. Gray Attempt will probably show speed from his outside post. But I like Pal coming back off a fresh name for Michael Stidham. His 3-year-old son of money came on in the late summer, early fall on the synthetics at Prescott Downs at Woodbine, earned his first stakes victory last time. His numbers have been on the rise, and like I said, he's going to show good speed from the inside. I like him wire to wire, and he's a 8-1 on the morning line.
With Colby Hernandez.
Yes.
Powell in the 7th. Very good.
And then my final one, I got one more there. In the first stakes of the day, the Letelier Memorial, race number 3, 6-furlongs, 2-year-old fillies. I like number 5, Halama. I like that Pioneer of the Nile filly. That weekend fun was a pretty well-regarded filly for Asmussen. I thought that day at Churchill, Halama really, I thought she looked a little bit green on the back stretch, rang perhaps, but really I thought finished well to win by 2 lengths. And she's definitely eligible to move forward off that race for Brandon Walsh. 5-1 with Corey Lannery.
Halama, the 2-year-old fillies group, just a group of 6 actually, and where you would think for 75,000 going 6, surprised them. Yeah, where are the 2-year-old fillies? I'm a little surprised that this didn't pull a bigger, and there's only 6 in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean, geez, not a lot of stakes. You know, most of the horses are both coming off maiden wins, so lightly raced horses. I'll say in that Mr. P. I mean, I won't be surprised to see Imperial Hemp when he could win by 3 lengths and just no surprise whatsoever. But he lost this year off a layoff at 1-5 odds at Tampa Bay Downs in his first race back. Be making his first start at 7 furlongs in nearly 2 years. And if he gets hooked on that inside post with XY Jet, his trip's going to be everything for him. I don't know what price Lasting Legacy will be, but if I was playing multi-race bet tickets, I'd throw him in there with the Imperial Hemp because that horse enters on the improve, lightly raced 5-year-old for Jason Service. 103, 104 speed numbers last time, looked pretty legitimate, and he's 1-for-1 at the distance. So those are my final thoughts, Steve.
I appreciate it, and I'm anxious to talk to Mike Welch about the Mr. Prospector yesterday when I just was going over the draw, just the 6-pack, but an interesting 6-pack. It's not just Imperial Hint and XY Jet. So I'm glad you pointed
and
out.
And ask him why they lengthened it. You know, that race has always been
used to be 6.
It's like Jets won it twice. So before. So I thought that was an interesting move. The Caraval mentioned it. He said, "I wish it was 6 furlongs." And Navarro was like, "Yeah, we'll see how he does. I wish it was 6 furlongs." So I thought it was interesting why they decided to do that.
The only thing that comes to mind would be, are they running the Gulfstream Park handicap, the 1-mile race? Are they running that on Pegasus Day?
That's a good question.
If they are, then that's the reason they're going 7, is to try to make it an easier jump from 7 to the flat mile. I mean, that you would think that if you're gonna lengthen a race like this, it's as a prep for something else. And I mean, they used to have. There was the Bister Prospector. Wasn't there something in between at 7/8? I'm just guessing. So I'll ask Mike. Michael Welch. You know, Welch. Welch should know this. I'm going to wager that Mike's got an answer. Maybe he doesn't. We'll see. Well, James, as always, appreciate not just this visit, but a great year. And the players appreciate it. You follow James on Twitter, James_Scully111. And, of course, as part of that acknowledgement last night, all the guests like James and the DRF visitors and the regulars, everybody is part of what.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Steve. Sure. I really enjoy being on here and talking about horses with you. Wish you all the best. Look forward to talking about the Kentucky Derby in 2020 with you.
Exactly. And that'll be front and center. We've got literally January 1st, right? You got the opening right off the bat. We've got action, the Withers, and so forth. So it won't take long. Thanks a lot, James. Have a wonderful Christmas and New Year.
All right, thank you, Steve. Thanks.
Top of the hour, a little past, and Marcus Hirsch will flesh out the rest of that card at Fairgrounds, and it's a good one. Also, still waiting. Haven't seen a figure. I should have asked Andy. I had Andy. I didn't even think about it. The figures from Fairgrounds on Wednesday. We'll get Marcus's thoughts about Warriors Charge's performance in that comebacker out of the Preakness. And more. Stay with us. Hour 2. Weekend preview at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Home, at the track, or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's BYK, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's BYK to get your $125 bonus.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine. 1.
I have sleeping dreams.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I am sleeping dream, but I haven't heard a word from you in years. Oh, your choir singing, and I'm just sitting here crying Christmas tears.
Back at the races, 10 minutes into hour two. Freddie King, Christmas Tears. Just great. As we try to get through our Christmas catalog, and we're running out of racetrack because Monday, our last show of 2019. We'll look forward to tomorrow's draw at Santa Anita as they put opening day together, and we'll talk about it extensively on Monday. And right now, we're going to talk extensively about fairgrounds and a couple of other topics with